Hi, this is Justine Toe, and you're listening to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity. Now, recently we got an ad pushed under the office door for beachfront accommodation. You know, we're talking about luxurious apartments, a concierge, a health club, restaurants, and this idea of high-end shopping at your door. And the ad says that this is the ultimate lifestyle. Now, I'm really pleased to have here in the studio with me Mick Martin, who's the minister at the Upper Room Church Community in North Sydney. And he's here to talk with us about the good life. Now, Mick, if I can hand you this ad, you've done some thinking on the idea of the good life. How does it play, or how does this ad play, into our ideas about what the good life is?
Yeah, thanks, Justine. I think this it's appropriate that we kick off with a reference to an advertisement in some ways, because there is this notion of a thing called the good life, which advertisers, particularly in corporations, like to promote to us. And really, it is about lifestyle, you know, the ultimate lifestyle being the tagline here. It's the good life is actually about a lifestyle that consists of having a lot of money, having material comfort, having novel and exciting experiences, having good health, and all of that. And so there's this thing that we are encouraged to aspire to, and there's this label that we attach to that, the good life. But it's really, in a lot of ways, it's a construct of advertisers and corporations designed to create in us, I think, a sense of dissatisfaction with the lives that we have.
So we will buy the product.
Well, that's
will
it.
Deliver the
exactly,
good life.
Exactly, yeah, because it's... And I think that the idea of there being a thing that we refer to as the good life implies that there's a not-so-good life or
which
even...
what we're currently living.
Or even a bad life. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so if you don't have all of these things that are being shown to you as evidence of the good life, or the things that make the trappings of the good life, if any of those things are lacking, then we're encouraged to think that maybe our lives are not as good as they ought to be, and that we need to pursue those things that will give us the good life that is being promised to us.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we spoke to some people on the street about what the good life meant to them, so let's have a listen to what they had to say.
So I suppose the good life is having the freedom and opportunity to do what you want to do. Oh, look, I've got a job that's okay. I get paid okay. I don't work very hard. I've got a house that I like. I've got kids that I like. I live in a city like Sydney.
So what does the good life look like for you?
Smiles on people's faces and consideration for others is how I'd kind of describe the good life.
For me, the good life is having my friends and family around me, and being able to travel around the world as freely as possible, because that's my passion.
Doing something that I enjoy, having enough money to be comfortable, having a good family, and lots of friends around me.
Good life for me is having somebody there that actually cares, you know, people around me that love me and want to go and travel and experience the same things as I do. So for me, it's not about the money, but it's more experience, life experience, and the people that you have around you.
I think it's the healthy life. All right, and after, if you are healthy, you can have everything.
I think good life would be probably to have a family, you know, be close to family, have a good house, have a job that, you know, you look forward to, you know, get up in the morning and go to, travel around, you know, twice a year at least.
Good relationships with family and friends. I believe in God, so a relationship with God is a good life for me.
Now, a lot of people mentioned having good relationships was key to the good life, which is great because, you know, obviously this is true. But we also heard people mention travel and leisure. These two things were high up on that list. Now, I just want to start by saying, well, we call this the good life because it is good, right? There's not many among us that would say, oh, you know what, fine travel, you know, fine dining, you know, traveling to exotic places, that's not for me, right? So in some ways, should we be taking issue with the good life?
No, I don't think so. I think it's a question of how we approach life, really. I think when it becomes all about lifestyle and it's just those superficial things, if you like, you know, the things you can see on the surface, what's interesting in the responses from people there too is the number of people that did talk about more meaningful, deeper things like relationship and family and so on. But when we only pursue the lifestyle stuff, and that becomes how we measure the quality or the value of our lives or our own personal success in life, then I think we lose something of what it really means to be human. You know, we start to lose sight of what the real stuff of a good life is. which is more the stuff of the heart, you know, it's the stuff of relationship. But those things are in of themselves not, you know, it's not wrong to have wealth. It's not certainly not wrong to be healthy. It's great to have all sorts of diverse life experiences and travel and see the world and have a comfortable home to live in. All of that is inherently good. But I think when that becomes the pursuit of our lives at the cost of other things, then I think we're poorer for it.
It does seem to me that even, like, I totally agree with what you said, that all that stuff is really good, but it can also become about, you know, my goals getting,
right.
getting you know, achieved and, you know, it's I have to judge my good life on based on how satisfied am I in the midst of all of this well.
It does become, it can lead into a very self-absorbed kind of approach to life, you know, where it's all about, as you say, it's all about me and what I want to achieve and my success and my fulfillment and so on. And again, it can drift into hedonism, you know, where it's just about pleasure.
For the sake of pleasure.
For the sake of pleasure and novelty, just because we're bored with the routine and the mundanity of life. And it can lead into narcissism, you know, if we take it too far. So, yeah, I think it's that there's an issue around that sort of self-orientation. And it's interesting, again, picking on advertisers, a study at Yale University some time ago identified the 10 most powerful words in the English language or something. And top of the list was the word you. And it's because people respond to that, you know, and some advertising agencies won't adopt any slogan or tagline that doesn't have the word you in it, you know. So I saw even recently there was an advertisement for one of the local universities MBA program, and the ad just had a picture of several ads, but each ad had a picture of this person from different angles, and it was just me first, you know. The idea they were using to promote the MBA program at the university.
I've seen other university ads that say your next life, right?
Exactly. So it's all of that. You know? And remember years ago there was the National Mutual campaign, which was really blatant about it. It said the most important person in the world, and then just the word you appears on the screen, you know. And that, I think that kind of is the essence of what this is all about. You know, it's this self-oriented, selfish approach to life. And that becomes our concept of the good life.
Now, often we might think that people are pursuing the good life here because, you know, this life may be all that there is. Right. But it's not just people of no faith that, you know, pursue the good life. There are some faith traditions that promise, you know, the good life to believers. And the idea of the prosperity gospel is very popular among some sections of the Christian church today. Can you sketch out for us what the idea of the prosperity gospel is?
Yeah, sure. It's sometimes known as the health and wealth gospel. And it's this idea that God, being good and being loving and benevolent, that his will is for his people to be blessed, and blessed in material ways as much as spiritual ways. So it's about having success in life in things like your career and your marriage, and having wealth to enjoy the good things of life. It's about enjoying perfect health all the time, and it's not unlike the sort of good life that's promoted to us by advertisers. You know, it's actually that kind of thing, but God becomes the source of that, and the problem I have with it, I guess, is that it excludes all the stuff that doesn't fit that picture, you know. And so it's all about the good stuff of life, and doesn't really deal well with the other stuff.
I somehow wonder that if someone is suffering or experiencing failure or something, then within the logic of such a prosperity teaching, perhaps, well, aren't we just left to conclude that if I'm suffering in my life, then there's something going wrong with my relationship with God, for
example? Yeah, I think that's often the spin that's put on it. And I don't want to be completely dismissive of, you know, people who, it's not that the opposite of the prosperity gospel is true, that, you know, that God actually wants us to be miserable and doing it tough all the time, you know, that you know, we know God does want good things for us, and that's fine. The problem then is if God is only in all the good stuff, then when you're going through a tough time, there's this doubt, I guess, that can come in that says, well, maybe I'm not where I should be, you know, or God's not happy with me, or I don't have enough faith, because if I did, then these things wouldn't be happening to me. And I think what I think is sad about that is that if we go to that mindset, then suddenly we create a distance between ourselves and God, because God's over there where the prosperity and the health and all the good stuff is, and I can't get to that at the moment, so I'm stuck here without him. And it can create this sense of a void in our lives where we don't see and experience God in the here and now and in the tough stuff that we're going through.
Yeah, and it seems to me that stuff like that really is similar in some ways to the self-help and the positive thinking sort of movement, because they also talk about how the so-called universe has this abundance, and it's just all the blessing is just waiting for you to grab it. And I remember reading Barbara Ehrenreich's book. She was taking her really keen wit to positive thinking, and she was saying that because she was struggling with having cancer, and she was hearing all this stuff like, oh, in some ways you might have invited that cancer on yourself. So it means that, you know, the individual can become responsible for all that when
it's all about failure and inadequacy and, you know, getting it wrong. And, you know, it's terrible. You
know? You're listening to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity.
Well, I wanted to talk about how you did a search through the titles of a big Christian bookstore, and it shows us that we would rather focus on the good times rather than the bad.
Right,
so tell us more about that.
Yeah, so I was preparing some material for a talk I was giving at our church on a Sunday, and I was suddenly struck by just the plethora of titles in the bookstores, the Christian bookstores, that are all about, you know, you, the you thing again. You know, the word you turns up so many times in the titles of the books, and things like Seven Steps to Success, you know, that is, and it's just a Christianization of all that positive thinking stuff, you know, in secular culture. So I just did a search under the heading, so they have the books categorized on their online website. So I did the search under Christian Living, under which comes titles are subheadings like spiritual growth and so on. I searched on the word success and succeed and successful and so on, and it was about 240-odd titles that had that word or one of those words in the title. And then I searched on the word suffering and suffer and so on, and it, there were 98 titles that had that word, and none of those books were on the bestsellers list. You know, everyone's reading the, you know, Best Life Now stuff and so on. And look, not that there isn't good content in some of those books, but I think the problem is that there's just an overemphasis on this self-development thing and this self-orientation thing again. And it can, you know, from a Christian perspective, I think, and this I think is the real danger, it can lead into almost an idolatry of self, where even God himself becomes, you know, we even have expressions, people talk about Jesus as a personal Lord and Savior. You know, we have personal assistants, we have personal trainers, we have personal coaches, and now we have a personal Lord and Savior. Mm-hmm. And I know that's not the intent of that expression, but I think that kind of mindset can begin to creep in, where Jesus almost becomes like the genie in the bottle, you know, and you rub the bottle and out he pops and grants you infinite wishes, not just three, but as many as you can dream up. And, you know, and I think that kind of gets things the wrong way around, you know, where it's almost like God's purpose in life, his purpose in our lives, is primarily about our self-development, you know, and I think, you know, I have trouble with that.
The comparison between the success titles versus the suffering titles, and also, as you said, like the language of the personal assistant, the personal Lord and Saviour, it really reveals our own, I guess, as you said, mindset and our values and all that sort of thing, and it's a really good thing to be conscious of.
Yeah.
Now, you've talked about this earlier, but you believe strongly that we need a theology that embraces all of reality, mm-hmm. right? The truth of how life really is, which obviously has to involve failure as well as victory. Can you tell us why?
Well, basically, Justine, I think it's because we're interested in truth and the whole truth and nothing but the truth, if you like. And so a theology that is selective in terms of how much of life experience it encompasses and how it interprets life, I think takes us away from truth, because it's leaving out a whole lot of stuff. And if our concept of God can't accommodate all of life, then it's falling short.
The Centre for Public Christianity, Beyond Religion.
If you're doing bad in terms of family or emotionally, then obviously you tend to get a bit depressed and, you know, you sit at home and things like that. So,
to tell you the truth, I don't cope with difficulty that well, but I have a very supportive family and my friends are really fantastic.
The good times wouldn't be good unless you had the bad there to compare them to, so that's all part of it.
I believe that he comforts me and supports me when times are tough. And I know that I have a hope for the future if times are tough as well.
So join us next time as we're going to talk about a theology that embraces all of life and reveals the truth of our lives as it really is, both in the good times and the bad. See you then.